Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and on this episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about Gen Con 2020, actually. So, Paul has run two major panels in the last couple days, live from Gen Con Online, and maybe you've participated in some games in the last weekend or so. So we're going to be talking about our Gen Con experiences in the past, in the current, and the future, and what that says about other possible conventions. Should you go? When should you go? Who should you go with? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Now, Dan, you and I went to Gen Con once together a long, long time ago.
We did.
Was that 2004, maybe, I want to say?
Or yeah, eight? I'm pretty sure it was 04, yeah.
Yeah, it was 04? It was 04, okay. That's great, yeah. That's great.
I was thinking about that same thing today, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I've been going off and on to Gen Con for years and years and years. In fact, I remember being there at their 25th anniversary, which I think would have been 92.
Right.
So I've been going for a long time. It's weird, honestly. I remember going originally, you know, I was maybe 15, I think, the first year I went. And it's shocking that I even got to go, basically pleaded with my parents to send me. Mostly because my introduction to the community of role players, when I was a young man, it seemed very alien and far away to me, right? I had right. gotten the books. I think you and I have shared this before. We both kind of learned from the books. I didn't really have any close friends that played. I only understood that there was a role playing community from hints in the back of the book of things like letters in a Dragon magazine or ads. To Gen Con, right? There's right in the back of the basic set, I think there's an ad for Gen Con.
I think you're right. I think it was very widely advertised at the time. It was a major part of their commercial project. And yeah, there was some kind of flyer in basically every product they made at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was aware of that and being kind of isolated in my fandom, pre-internet, right? Like, and I had no friends who really played, and it was just me reading the books. Yeah. Desperate to play the game, begged my parents to send me off to Gen Con, so off I went. And that's it was a weird time, I think, to go to Gen Con back then, and it's definitely very, very different now.
I think that's the most amazing story that you've shared with me about your gaming history, about being taken to being allowed to go into Gen Con by yourself at that age. And being supported by your parents on that, because where I was the opposite. It was a struggle, and there was a point where I asked to go to a D&D summer camp, and that actually got among the most negative reactions of anything I ever did, actually. So I'm fascinated by that story that you got to go at such a young age on your own.
It's just my like, parents. My parents were really super heroic or insane. I don't know what they were thinking. So I think the first year I went, my dad basically got us tickets to fly out. I grew up in New York. We flew out to Milwaukee, which is where it was back then. And he knew nothing about the hobby, and nor was he really interested in it at all.
Right,
so
right.
he went just to support me and just to have a little fun for himself. What he did was we flew out there. We stayed in a hotel together. He would, in the morning, in the rental car, drop me off at the convention center, be like, have fun. And then he would go off and mostly go to ball games. He went to a lot of ball games and generally like toured Milwaukee or whatnot. And then in the evening, he would pick me up and we would go out to dinner together and we'd hang out for the evening. And that was my first Gen Con experience, which is just
And just to be clear, you
bizarre.
Were what age to be clear? Because I still have trouble wrapping my head.
I was 15. I was 15.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, at that point, I probably had a semi-regular D&D group, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I really got into D&D maybe when I was 12. And like from 12 to 15, it was purely a theoretical thing, right? I maybe played a game once in a blue moon, convinced some friends to play, and the maturity level wasn't really there for them to take it seriously or whatnot. So it was very tenuous role-playing for me at that point. But by the time I was 15, I probably had a regular group that I was playing with.
I think that was, I mean, at that point, I'd been DMing for, good Lord, at least 5 or 6 years, I guess. Dan in the chat actually asked when I started playing D&D specifically. He started in 84, which was a great year for gaming. 84, what a great year for gaming. And I think I started in 78 or 79, I think. With the Holmes Basic set. So 15 was the age when I suggested going to a D&D summer camp. In Maine, not that far away, but you know what? My folks were less comfortable traveling. They were less comfortable sending us to travel. That was just not on the table for us at the time.
I mean, now here's the crazy thing. So for every summer thereafter, for the rest of my high school career, I went to Gen Con. And it just got more and more wild. After that first trip, my dad was like, "Yeah, I'm glad I did that for you, and I'm glad that you had fun, but I don't want to ever do that again." Yeah. So I think the following year, I managed to convince a friend and his parents to take all four of us.
Okay, great.
And then I actually remember, I think when I was 17, going entirely by myself, condoned by my parents. They bought the plane tickets and everything, gave them to me.
Wow.
And I was armed with my older brother's college ID in case the hotel gave me any flack for being underage.
Brilliant. Wow.
Yep.
Holy smoke.
That was a crazy trip.
You know, so people, I mean, you know, it actually came up in one of our comments on one of our prior shows. If, you know, we usually identify ourselves by location of, like, you're near Boston and I'm currently in Brooklyn, New York. But I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Maine, you know, rural area in Maine. Yeah. And so the cultural shift from where I grew up my family to now is rather cliff-like, rather radically different. My family wasn't comfortable visiting here, in New York for a number of years. And I think the first time I flew on a commercial plane, I was almost 30, I think. I think I might have been maybe like 27-ish before I actually flew on a commercial plane. And I was like, oh, my God, what's going on with this?
So I
maintain a small amount of jealousy. Maybe we should... We should fast forward.
Those were
the old days. But I think that one of the things that, I mean, that's what I like to dig into. But you've done such one interesting work in the last year or two tracking convention attendance numbers, specifically Gen Con. Maybe we should look at, like, where has Gen Con been recently for number of people?
Yeah,
like
So let's look at the graph right now, and you can find this on the Wikipedia article for Gen Con. That's where I've pulled this from. But here's the current graph of their attendance. And I remember for many years on my blog, I've posted snapshots of this graph, and it's definitely changed quite a bit over the years that I've been tracking it. You know, the really fascinating thing is, you know, it was just this exponential growth and then kind of flatlined in the late 90s. You know, and then we thought, oh, that's it. That's as big as Gen Con's going to get. And then suddenly it took off again, right? Yeah, it's very strange. But so I was probably going to Gen Con at the end, the very tail end of that first exponential bump up. And then throughout the whole sort of, well, this is how big Gen Con is. And frankly, this growth is something that's caused me to stop going to Gen Con recently, frankly. I remember, because I remember going there on the 25th anniversary, I was kind of interested in going during their 50th anniversary. But everything I heard leading up to that about the size and how difficult it was to find hotels and, you know, what a crunch it is just to register for games... I said, you know what? Forget it. I think we ended up going to Origins instead, just to,
You
know, still get that big convention feel, even though it's, you know, half the size of Gen Con.
It's interesting because you know, so you and I started playing together. Like I went, got back to actually having a live play group when I met you, basically. And so at basically the start of the third edition era. So it's funny that the time that you, that we, the one time that I went with you in 04 is right in the middle of that flatline period.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s, when I thought that, when I had the sensation that there was a kind of a rebirth, a renaissance of experience in the third edition era, but at least for Gen Con, that was actually the flat, crappy point. And then that latter explosion is more or less in the fifth edition era, more or less.
I mean, and to be clear, the flatline crappy part is they had only 25,000 people, right?
Like, right.
Still
right.
Ridiculous. Right.
But you know, off the peak and no growth. Yeah.
William makes a really great point here in the chat of, like, seems like it maybe picks up around the advent of social media.
Okay. All right. That's a good point. My old man sensibility still doesn't jump to that as the first thing. So thank you for reminding us of that. Actually,
it could be. I mean, you can also sort of look at when editions came out, right? Like, I'm sure that fifth edition kind of coincides with one of those rises. But I think, I don't know. Yeah. Social media is really interesting, right? Because that
makes sense.
That has really, you know, the internet and social media is really what's changed our ability to spread hobbies like this, right?
Yeah,
I think our friend BJ always used to say that, like, back in the day, you had a weird hobby, you know, it was just what you could figure out on your own, right? You and your library card.
Right.
And that's pretty much
how
you learned about a hobby. And now it's like, no, you go online and suddenly you're connected by everyone who loves it and they're immediately willing to teach you stuff. And
that's the good thing of the internet. That's the great thing about the internet. I mean, granted that, you know, fantasy gaming role playing is a bit of a subculture, you know. You had to go by yourself the first time you went to Gen Con. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the capacity to do that. Not everybody has the capacity to find. I mean, again, when I got my first basic D&D game, because there's a lot of people that say you really need a mentor to get into the hobby. I'm like, nope, got the box, read the box. I was the DM for everybody. Nobody else had ever heard of it, period, ever. And so you had to kind of dig in and make an extra effort. And you're right. Now with any kind of subculture, obviously not just role playing or anything like that, any kind of weird minority subculture, you can immediately connect to somebody in the world to communicate with that. And that's the single biggest change in the world in my lifetime. Hmm. Right. So cell phones and being able to connect to anybody anywhere in the world, that is a completely historic change that's happened in my lifetime. And I am still trying to adjust to that, actually. Yeah. But that's the great thing.
Totally. You know, as I look back on my role-playing experience, I feel like conventions fill this very important niche for me where, you know, I always think of, like, every game I run as an experiment, right? I'm always trying something different or weird or new, and then I'm always trying to analyze that and come up with, oh, here's how I'm going to alter my next game based on that.
Right.
But generally when I'm running stuff at home or whatnot, you know, that's the crunchy iteration mode where I'm trying to refine and make better. But the conventions, I think, feel like are the inflection point where I meet a bunch of people and crazy new ideas that never occurred to me suddenly happen.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's just because you're around so many people and you're having so many conversations and being exposed to so much new stuff that you never even imagined. You know, that's where that spark can happen. So that's, I you know, I fear the loss of that right now. Think that
I totally get that. I totally get that, and it's very reminiscent to it. It's a very intense experience, and I haven't gone to a lot of conventions, but it's a very intense experience, and it's always, I always have a major con high or you know, heightened charisma, as some people call it, afterwards. And it very much echoes what I've heard recently about. You know, the theory behind Silicon Valley of put a bunch of, you know, really intensely interested people together in a small space. There will be entirely unpredictable connections happening and brainstorming happening, and there will be ideas that pop up that nobody could have had in isolation.
Yep.
And with the distance working that's currently happening, there is some concern about, will those surprise, serendipitous meetings show up, and people are trying to have simulated versions online, but I think the jury's still out about whether that is still a silver bullet or not.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a lot of people in a small space, you know, conventions right. are absolutely right. that. I'm going to just jump to our picture right. here of the crowd gathering to enter Gen Con. Right. I don't remember what year this is, but...
I think it was last year.
Right, right, there we are. I remember this, the opening day of Gen Con as they're about to open the exhibit hall, just the crush of the crowd.
Right.
I continue to say, regardless of how things progress with the pandemic, whether or not a vaccine eventually comes, I think this kind of scene is the last thing we're going to see come back.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It kind of has to.
Yeah. Yeah. Other activities will percolate back at different times, but this one's, one's going to feel comfortable with this for a long time, I think.
I would expect so. Even, I mean, as you said, you'd stop going to Gen Con anyway because of a large number of people. Not everybody's comfortable in that kind of situation. When I saw this particular shot, I think as a video last year, I was like, yikes! And I called in disinvited artist Isabella Garbani to see. I say, hey, look at this. And I just started, she was like, nope, and walked out that door right there. Just as soon as I hit play. So that is a lot of people, and we have enjoyed conventions very, very much, but those super giant ones, they are, I mean, even the PAX that we went to recently,
PAX Unplugged.
There was a lot of hiking. It seemed like large distances. Yeah.
Now, my main gripe, honestly, is with the size of Gen Con these days is not the sheer number of people in the packed crowds. Honestly, I kind of like that stuff. But it's the logistics. They've hit a logistical wall a little bit over there. The fact is, if you're traveling from afar and you want a hotel, and you want a hotel that's within walking distance of the convention, because of course you do, then you had better be online at exactly the right time, pressing the button. You better have a good internet connection, because they're gone in under an hour. Right? And I just can't deal with that. I just can't deal with that. I feel like PAX Unplugged, it's just a matter of, scaling the technology, scaling the servers, getting a better back end, and scaling the location, right? Fine. Maybe they've outgrown Indy at this point, and they should be looking for larger venues.
I think that, have they announced a change from Indy? Now I can't remember.
I don't think so.
A year or two ago.
Who knows at this point, though, right? I mean, all bets have got to be off at this point.
Sure. I'm thinking, I thought I saw an announcement for 2 years ago. That they had planned a change 5 years in the future or something like that.
I don't know if they planned a change. They might have said something like, "We have a contract up until."
Yeah.
And it's nebulous after that.
Which you have to say for negotiation purposes.
But it's tough. it was compounded by there was a time there where the convention center was under construction, so parts of it were not available. But I remember having to just hike across town because I have 10 minutes to get from game one to game two, and they're in ballrooms of different hotels that are many city blocks apart, and I'm running to get to them.
And the other thing that's really uncomfortable is the registration process. You get online and you hit the refresh key, and everybody is intending for their favorite slot in the first 15 seconds or so. And we're spoiled. Every April we have a house convention that Paul organizes, and he's written custom software for the registration system. And it's by far the best registration system I've ever dealt with by a light year. And it's more or less kind of a recreation of what happened by mail in the 80s of you list a prioritized 1 through 20 games you'd like to be in, send it in, and then at some later point it comes up with the best optimal match for everybody's prioritized selections, and there's no rush, and we do it in a relaxed fashion. Now, I guess you've said maybe that wouldn't scale to something with 50,000 people in it, but nonetheless, as an end user experience, we are completely ruined. For any other convention registration, because it's everything else sucks.
Thank you for the praise. It's a problem I've thought about a lot. And by day, I am a software engineer. In fact, now I'm a contract software engineer. Now that things have changed due to the pandemic, so I don't know if folks who are involved in the Gen Con registration software back end are watching, get in touch. I got a lot of ideas.
I could give a higher recommendation. If anybody is listening, I could not give a higher recommendation to Paul Siegel. I've said it before. Paul Siegel is, to my understanding, the world's number one chief expert on convention registration software. He's done it, experienced it. He's dealt with conventions his entire life, and it's the single best. And he's the hardest working programmer I've ever met.
Oh, thanks, so, thank you. One of the registrations.
I'll even say, I mean, if you want to check it out, right?
I feel like you should be wearing a big clock at this point, Dan. Right?
It's
getting a little out of control.
Okay, I'm cutting that off. I love Public Enemy. Massive respect to them. But that's still publicly available, right? People can go to HouseCon and see the small scale registration is actually publicly available. They can use it for their own HouseCons if they want.
It is true. It is available. It's not free. Basically, it anticipates. I don't know how much people are going to want to do this right now. It's scaled for a small, like 50 people or less size gathering, and it assumes that you're all going to be pitching in to cover the costs of something like, say, a rental of a large house. Right now, maybe that's not a thing that people are really doing. The world's kind of changed. So.
True.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's really, you know, so we've just gone through, we hosted a couple panels for Gen Con Online. Gen Con, I think, actually has done a really good job of adapting to the online system. I've also done some other online conventions. We were at Con of Champions. So I'm actually pretty reasonably impressed with how Gen Con has pivoted on this one. There's a couple of things that stand out to me that I would call out. One is something that actually struck me as really weird up front, which was that they insisted that when I was signing up to run these panels, that I treat it like it was going to happen at a physical space. That meant, not publishing where it was going to be seen, right? The actual Twitch URL did not go in the description. Having a limited number of tickets, right? And they wanted me to specify a max number of tickets. And the funny thing is, even though they're free, and obviously our panels were public on our Twitch channel, anyone could watch, I think having that registration process and building into their hype train meant that folks found the stuff they were interested in, they bought tickets, and once they had bought, $0, but they had bought tickets. Yeah. And once they had tickets, maybe they were then inclined to show up, right?
That makes sense.
So, So I think it actually worked really well.
I see in the chat our new viewer Winter Bunny is agreeing with you that Gen Con did a lot better than other conventions. Like, I'm wondering if anybody in the chat wants to share what other online conventions they've participated in this year for comparison purposes. I guess we'd be interested in hearing that.
Would be interesting to know. Yeah, certainly when we were doing Con of Champions, which was done to help support Tabletop Events, which is a website that helps convention organizers have an online system for registration and whatnot. That company was in danger of going under. They did a big fundraiser. Clearly, they were using the same software they use for the physical stuff, and they had not done a lot of work to adapt it. I don't blame them for that. They were just trying to survive at that point. And I was doing everything I could to help support them. So, so I'm not terribly surprised that there wasn't a lot of innovation there. But, the other thing I saw, Dan, that I'll call out Gen Con for that I was really impressed by was the squad stream. Did you look at the squad stream?
I did not.
Okay, so Twitch, on Twitch, Gen Con had three different channels, right, where they're showing different stuff, different live plays or games or panels or whatnot. And then they have this squad view that shows three of them simultaneously. Kind of like one in a big window and two smaller ones, and you're only getting the audio for the top one, but you can just jump between them, just click and boom, boom, boom. And watching that stream, I felt like was the most in this virtual setting where I felt like it feels like I'm at a convention, right? Like there's stuff.
Okay.
There's stuff around me going on, and I go, what's this? Ooh, what's this, right? I thought that was well done.
Cool. I see Dan saying that he was kind of disappointed by Comic-Con. When was that, actually? Was that just in the last month?
I feel like that was fairly recent, right? Yeah. I think that was within the last couple of weeks.
That's the other thing, Case, because I kind of wanted to say, well, look, Gen Con's had a little bit more time than some conventions to pivot. So the whole... Yeah, there you go. Thank you. The whole, you know, switchover happened in March, and some conventions were scrambling last minute to make changes. I mean, again, we were at PAX Unplugged, like just days before everything got locked down, and then we had like half attendance from normal. And so I was going to start to say that maybe Gen Con's had a little bit extra time to do a better job, but if Comic-Con wasn't great and Otakon wasn't great just in the last week, that's praiseworthy for Gen Con doing a good job.
I mean, I think that they were under a time crunch when they were adapting, but I will say this, right? Like, first of all these conventions, they're making it up as they go, right? So not surprised that some are doing better than others, because, you know, whole new ball game, and just trying to figure out what are the rules, right? The other thing is, like, Gen Con probably has an advantage of, like, I guess budget, right? I think Gen Con's got some full-time employees that they can throw at the problem. You know, so possibly they have a little more budget to figure out a solution. Well, you know, or they just did a really good job, you know?
Sounds like they did a really good job.
Yeah.
Everybody's been really praising what's happened this weekend. So it'll be interesting stuff, like, in the near future. You know, obviously nothing's as big as Gen Con, but Reaper Con Online is the first weekend in September. Greyhawk Con, organized by Lord Gasumba or Jay Scott on Twitch, is the first weekend in October. So it'll be interesting to see how well those normally in-person things pivot online. Yeah. Hopefully they get some experiences out of this and do a good job too.
You know, I think for me, the big thing is those extra elements of community, the things that make it feel like a gathering of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do when the individual experience is you're still at home at your computer looking at a computer screen, right? Like, I think we saw this in a small scale, right? So when I ran the panels last night and the night before, you know, I reached out to a whole bunch of guests. And so we got a whole bunch of guests. And so we were really trying to not overdo it and have like 50 people on screen at once. So on our end, it was just me on camera. And so that left you, Dan, to be on the chat and helping, you know, interface with the audience in the chat and helping feed the Q&A section so that the questions would come up. And I think that really helped, right? I think those panels stood out to me because you were engaging with the people in the chat.
And you know, the funny thing is, that is not a task that I've ever done before. I have not done a moderate chat kind of thing, and I found it to be really surprisingly enjoyable. I actually really liked it. As we mentioned afterwards, I kind of liked the less pressure from normally being on screen. I love being on screen, frankly. I love performing, you know, in our games. But I could just kick my legs up here and actually listen to you guys for a while and think about what I was about to type instead of just blurting it out because I have to fill up the air. So actually, I really enjoyed that live chat that we were having last 2 nights.
Yeah, that was really nice. And I think that, again, it helps make it feel more like a big community activity rather than just, you know, talking into a can.
You know, it's funny. So Winter Bunny is saying that you hadn't used Twitch before, and actually, We ourselves are kind of having, so we, you know, currently simulcast to both YouTube and Twitch, and up until just recently, our main emphasis was YouTube. And we've had so many great responses from being on Twitch in the last couple of weeks. We are currently behind the scenes having a debate about which one we should prioritize, actually. So we've had a very good time on Twitch in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. You know, I spent a few weeks a while back digging into Twitch just on my own, doing silly, you know, playing random ancient video games that I'm sure no one cares about, but mostly just to, like, understand the interface more and, like, actually engage with it. Because it's very easy for us to just use this third-party tool that just sends our stream out to multiple sites and just say, we're on Twitch. It works. But actually, like, dig in and, like, figure out the tools and engage with that community it's been really rewarding.
I mean, I was just learning stuff last night, actually. Because I was on the Twitch stream for the first time, and I was like, how does this work? I can just get a user's name like this? Great, wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting, I think, for us to see. You know, in the past, our shows, a lot of our chat has come from YouTube, and we're curious to see now if we'll see an influx of that of Twitch folks as we try to engage more with that audience and hopefully you know, up our game essentially. Right? I know it's on us to up our game on Twitch, to see if we can hang on to some of those folks that we brought in via our panels.
Yeah,
hope we can.
Yeah,
hope we can.
It's been very rewarding, and we've gotten, you know, great support from people like Lord Gosumbo when we were on his show a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
Do you think, to bring it back to conventions, do you think that the, so you know, we all agree that we're not going to dive into 50,000 person conventions all piled up on top of each other. Do you think that possibly long term there might be like an adjunct to conventions as a standard thing? Like if there's greater outreach and there's people that normally don't or haven't been able to attend conventions live, do you think that conventions might start having an adjunct that's online at the same time as their actual in-person conventions? Do you think that'll be a thing going forward?
I could see it happening, or possibly a bifurcation where you get online conventions versus the live convention, right? Like, I could see a world where there's, like, you know, Gen Con's still doing its thing in Indy every summer, and then there's, like, a Gen Con winter from home online that happens at the, you know, 6 month point or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, especially for the really big ones, if they have the budget to have a big staff, why not? Right. Why not also have an online arm to the convention?
How common has it been to, I mean, you and I were at a, what's it called again? Acquisitions Unlimited, right? Is that?
Oh, Acquisitions Incorporated.
Yeah, we were at an Acquisitions Incorporated taping, mm-hmm. and it was obviously broadcast later. Has it been common to have live panels at conventions that get broadcast online at the same time? Has that been growing recently?
That's certainly very much a PAX thing. Certainly, PAX has done that a lot.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, a great comment here from William. Wait, I want to put that one up here.
Yeah.
You know, would people pay for it, or would they expect it to be free, right?
Great point.
What about that perceived value, right? Like, that's the interesting thing. One of the things is all these conventions pivoting to online, like, the first change they're making is, it's free, right? Because they're just trying to hang on to their audience, and I get it.
Right.
But at some point, they got to stop doing that, right? They're going to have to start charging. Now, I think maybe at Gen Con, while, like, the panels and the badges were free, I think you still had to maybe pay for some events.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, some of the events were still, you know, $2 or a buck to play a game.
Okay. Great.
I think. I'm not totally sure on that.
Okay.
But clearly... Sorry?
It feeds into, a couple minutes back, William pointed out that, like, when he sells things on eBay, he never gives them for free, even though he just basically wants to get rid of them. He puts at least a $5 price on them to give some kind of perceived value. To
get some perceived value, yeah.
Very smart.
Yeah. And I think that's what those ticket fees are about, right? Like, if Gen Con's really worried about their bottom line, then we're going to see badge prices come back, and you're going to see your $50, $75, $100, whatever it is these days, badge.
Right.
They're going to have to do that, right? They can't keep holding free conventions. And will people pay for it? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. Maybe if that's the only option.
Right. And it makes sense why they didn't want people to advertise it as being free online in the first place, to maintain that expectation that Gen Con is some kind of premium event that's worth your money.
Yeah.
Great.
You know, okay, so here's another interesting problem of online conventions that I just thought of. Sure, it definitely opens the doors, right? A lot of people who could never make it to Gen Con before are now able to go to Gen Con online, and that's a fantastic thing. But there's still the time zone problem. Now, if you tuned into our panel last night at 8 p.m., where I was joined by a bunch of DMs Guild authors, Micah Watt was calling in from Australia. And you may not realize that while we started at 8 p.m., he started at 8 a.m. He was a full 12 hours off from us. And that's why the panel was scheduled for that late, was so that he could join in at a time that was reasonable for him. You know, but there's a lot of other stuff. Like, he was mentioning to me, there's, like, a lot of the stuff in Gen Con he just couldn't possibly go to because it's going to happen in the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, it's funny. Even we have... I think I can say this. I mean, you know, these things are all tentative. So if I say a future looking statement and it turns out not to happen, hopefully you don't hold it against us. But we have Sean Reynolds booked on as a guest on the talk show in a number of weeks, and he's on the West Coast. And you know, I think when we schedule this particular talk show for 1 p.m. on Sundays, I go, that's convenient. You can get up, you can have brunch, you can watch it. But it is quite a bit earlier on the West Coast, so it was a little bit of a burden on a Sunday morning for him. Mm-hmm. And then later than that, we have Shannon Applecline booked, who does all the classic historical biography stuff on DM's Guild on Drive-Thru RPG. And he's in Hawaii. So when I asked him to be on the show, he was like, really? That's really early in the morning for me on a Sunday. And because of that, he specifically asked to be booked the weekend after daylight savings time changes, because they don't use daylight savings changes in Hawaii. And therefore, technically for him, it's at least an hour later after the switch. And we were dealing with all that. So that's just one person at a time every other week. Yeah, and if you're doing that for a whole convention with 50,000 people all at once, it's a much larger issue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's if you recall, when we had Joe Manganiello on the show, he had just rolled out of bed, right? He was like, was early morning for him.
Right.
I want to think when we targeted 1 o'clock, we did think about, sometimes we'll be dealing with West Coast people. Maybe that 3 hours is still it's 10 for them. So I think probably we're thinking of viewers, right? Oh, a viewer at the West Coast is watching it at 10. That's not terrible. But I don't know. Maybe we need to be a little more fluid with our scheduling, or maybe we need to be okay with pre-recording stuff and then just showing it. I don't know. But let me tie it back to conventions. So what does that mean for conventions, right?
Right.
You know, this was actually a huge problem for me at Con of Champions, because the assumption on their software is still that it's at a physical location. It didn't even do any time zone translation in their website. And I constantly had to do the mental math of knowing they think it's central time. I'm in Eastern time. So I got to, change the time zone. Fortunately, Gen Con got that one right? Everything. Or did they? Or was it just conveniently in my time zone? I'm not sure. I'm not sure now. And certainly everything I looked at said Eastern time, and I was happy about that. Dan mentions in the chat of having the reverse problem in England, right? Where they're, 5 hours ahead, right? So, let's see.
And we have been dealing with that with booking for the Big Bad. We have at least one guest who will be dialing in from the UK. So we had the schedule for that. And William was talking about students at a school. And I had a student of mine from South Korea. And when the coronavirus hit, that gentleman went back to South Korea. And he was taking some of my tests at 2 in the morning, which I kind of felt bad about. But there were other issues that kind of constrained me on that.
So does that mean that conventions will start to try and be more global and have more stuff at every hour of the day to appeal to everyone? If they do, does that mean you're just going to see, if I'm in Australia and I'm attending Gen Con, are all my events going to be run by Australians because they happen to be in the same time zone as me?
You know, I kind of want that. I don't want everybody to be all in Australia, but or in other words,
we're all going to Australia. You heard it here. We'll see you there, everyone.
I don't want everybody to be stuck with the people that they would normally be interacting with anyway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Wouldn't it be really nifty if conventions went global and had, round the clock sessions, and because there are some people who are night owls, such as myself, that would be perfectly happy to be the game at 1, 1 or 2 or 3 a.m. our time. Would be really pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah. I did casually, when I was looking through Gen Con's schedule, did notice that they had some very late night events, but I think that's also typical for Gen Con. I remember going to a Gen Con once and meeting this guy who said he didn't get a hotel room when he comes to Gen Con. He's like, I don't bother with a hotel room. I just take cat naps wherever I can, and I just do 4 days of convention. I'm like,
that's hardcore.
That's nuts.
That's really hardcore.
Yeah. Both respect and pity for that person. That's mad.
Wow. Wow, that's super. That's yeah. super.
So yeah, I don't know. I guess it'd be interesting. I mean, I don't mind the idea of having this sort of more global time zone mentality. I'm just curious about the logistics of it. How do you make it work? How do you make sure that if I'm the organizers of Gen Con, how do I make sure that there's enough stuff happening at every hour of the 24-hour time cycle? Or do you just say, it'll come out in the watch, whatever. Right? There's another interesting aspect.
I'm distracted by our commentators saying that they're early risers and get up at 3 or 4 in the morning. What are you doing watching this show? I'm like completely rattled by that. I'm like, how are you doing? Good for you guys. I wish.
Yeah.
I wish I could do that. Holy smoke. Amazing. That's impressive.
Yeah, I was just talking to you. I was up past midnight last night, and I was telling my wife that I get very upset when I'm up past midnight because I know that my internal clock is going to wake me up at 7 a.m. regardless. Gotcha. So, like, every hour past midnight is a definite 1 hour less that I'm going to get of sleep.
I'm more or less just a random number generator on both ends, so it's just like, I know it's going to be a multiple of 1.5 hours. That's all I know. That's it. Like I always sleep D4 plus 2 times 1.5 hours is basically my sleep schedule all the time.
That's delightful. I just love the idea that I imagine you in your nightcap walking over to the nightstand, pick up the D4. Tick. Okay.
You know, the funny thing is, okay, see, I'm going to regret all these revelations. I don't wear a nightcap. I actually wear a balaclava. I actually wear the balaclava that I used to use when I was racing.
I didn't imagine. I thought I was being silly. I didn't think you actually wore any headwear whatsoever to sleep.
Well, Paul, you would have seen it when we share a room at a convention, except that you go to sleep so early.
Yeah. Oh man, you know what? It's totally true. This problem,
sleeping with that.
This problem is not at all unique to online conventions, right? I'm thinking now of you and I going to TotalCon and your plight at finding food at the right times.
Yes.
Dan was in this weird schedule and wanted to eat at like 10 o'clock at night. And, man, there was just nothing. And it was a comedy of errors, him trying to find food at that time of night in Marlborough, Massachusetts, which is not exactly a metropolitan location.
And the thing is, the convention document said there's a snack bar at 11 p.m., and so I kept going from station. It's like, where's the snack bar? Where's the 11 p.m. snack bar? And he's like, I've never heard of it. Maybe it's over there. Maybe it's at item location B.
Yeah.
And I go to, where's the snack bar? Well, maybe you should check A. The A just sent me here. Maybe you should check location C. You should front up the front desk. And within 2 days, the security is recognizing me as the guy trying to get food at 11. And random staff people are showing up saying, sir, here's your sandwich, out of nowhere. And it never happened again. It doesn't happen twice. It's not dependable, but people are just showing up with random sandwiches after a while.
That's right. You had a lot of sandwiches handed to you.
It was loopy.
Yeah. I mean, that's just illustrative, I think, of just how much of a logistical nightmare putting on a convention is, right? The person who wrote the schedule is not the same as the person who's manning the front desk, is not the same as the person who's setting up the food. Then, now, take that from your 2,000-person local con at a little hotel in Massachusetts and expand it to a 70,000-person convention. That's online now and distributed, and I don't even see the people I'm talking to apart from, like, scheduled online interactions. Wow, that's wild. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I don't know what the right answer is there. Is it more attempts at structure, or is it less? And we just say, we'll see what happens, right? Like, one of the advantages of an online convention is you're not limited by physical space, like number of ballrooms. You don't say like, we can't have another panel at this time because there's not enough ballrooms. Right. No, there's infinite ballrooms, right?
Right. That's the next. That's the name of my next adventure and my next band.
Infinite Ballrooms.
Infinite Ballrooms. I'm writing that down right now.
Yeah. Here you go. Winter Bunny says, "Take the stream with me because smartphones." I'm always in the ballroom.
Yeah. And you also made the point earlier of you could look stuff up. You could have multiple devices around and make it really easy to look stuff up that you needed during an event. And I've taken advantage of that myself.
That is the inverse issue, right? Of just like there is so much stuff, but how do you get it in front of people? I did notice that on the Gen Con Discord server that there was a whole channel just called Featured Events where they had some staffer who was posting for every hour, here's three events you might be interested in. Here's our sort of featured three events happening at this hour.
Great.
Yeah, so I think stuff like that is super important, right? And again, you only get that if you think to do it and you have the staff to say, okay, your job is go write up featured events for every hour.
And also this point that you also have about eating well, particularly if you have dietary restrictions or something like that, becomes much, much easier when you're at home. That's a really good point, actually. Because I sometimes don't do very good at that.
I mean, the joking of the comedy of finding food aside, I remember past Total Cons when it was at another hotel where there was really one food option. And for those viewers who don't know, I am a vegetarian, and it was not at all vegetarian friendly. And there was a couple of years there where I would come to Total Con with a big cooler of food, and I think I would smuggle in like a toaster or anything I could plug in to cook my own food, and I was just self-sufficient in my hotel room because I was like, because it was combined by the problem of it happened in February in Massachusetts, which at that time meant feet of snow, and so if you dared to leave, you probably weren't going to find parking when you returned.
I remember you telling me about that. About half the parking lot taken up by mounds of plowed up snow.
That was rough. It's much better now. They moved to a new location, which is much. Not only is the parking situation taken care of, but they're right across the street from actually a whole bunch of restaurants. So you could just walk to restaurants now, which is so super convenient, right? I know. For my online convention, my favorite restaurant is just in the next room, right?
Yep.
Of course, I got to make the food, but can't win them all.
Yeah, which is great. You know, the one time that that I went to Gen Con with you and some of our closest friends and BJ and people like that, had to do it once for me. Had a blast. I remember. It's funny because I got started, and my first game was, and I booked games the whole, I didn't have any blocks off, I booked games the whole weekend to get as much in as possible and as many different, I don't know, like editions of D&D as possible, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. And the first game was terrible. It was like one of the worst games I've ever seen is someone's running a two-hour ship-based, we're fighting on a ship game, and he gets to the table and he's like, oh, I should have prepared some pictures of a ship or something like that. Does anybody have any loose paper I could draw on? And he gets two pieces of notebook paper with the Riffly spiral ripoff part still on there, and quickly draws two ships, right? And then is like, I love creative things in combat. And two rounds later, I'm like, I have a grappling hook, so I grapple over to the other ship and I swing across. And he's like, that doesn't sound like a reasonable thing. I don't think that's physically possible to really do. And I was like, if you are making a game at Gen Con, the premier gaming convention, you bring your A game. You don't. Yeah. I was really surprisingly disappointed. Now, fortunately, the games for the convention generally just got better and better and better. So my whole weekend just got exponentially more wonderful. And then the best thing of all was getting in the D&D tournament with me and you and BJ playing all dwarves, and we'd been practicing our dwarven Scottish accents for a week in the run-up to it. And as you recall, there were two people there that hadn't met us, and we got hammered with the four of us all doing our Scottish accents.
Yep.
So that was the D&D Open, and then I personally got in a D&D tournament without you guys, which is classic traditional, scored for points, team-based, multiple rounds, go for the championship. Mm-hmm. And I came away from that thinking, this is how D&D should be played. Thinking, at least for me, with my competitive nature, I see why in the 80s and advanced D&D were tuned for convention tournament play. And I came away going, I would like to play in a tournament all the time. This is my favorite way of playing D&D. And perhaps, Paul, perhaps that experience fed into the idea for The Big Bad, where we get to do that as an upcoming online online show, which we're currently in production.
I was wondering if you were building there to a promo of The Big Bad. Yeah, but if anything Dan just said sounds exciting to you, do check out wanderinggames.com/thebigbad. That's our new show we're working on, which does feature a lot of what he was just talking about.
It's funny you said, let's do a show on Gen Con. And I was like, that is like one of my most precious, like fond, like this is how it ought to be. This is great. Tournament experience that totally fed into the big
You know, I've gone to a lot of conventions at this point, and I would say that when talking to folks, and especially folks who've never been to a convention, a gaming convention of any kind, my word of warning is always that, like, probably half your games are not going to be great, right? Like, it's a real crapshoot, especially in the early days. Now, I think, and I say early days because, like, depending on how big of a convention we're talking about, if you're going to a small local con, probably you want to go for a couple of years in a row, you're going to start meeting people, you're going to start recognizing names, and you're going to get better at attending the convention. I know that seems like a weird thing to have, but you're going to get better at attending the convention because you're going to say, like, oh, I know this person runs great games. Oh, this game is run every year at this time, so I'm always going to go to that. Like, that's my Total Con experience now, is like, well, I have these staples, and like, my schedule's half done just right then and there, because I'm like, oh, well, I have to do this on Saturday night. Well, I have to do this every, you know, got to go to the Car Wars game because it's freaking great. So you get better at it. But I would think the first year at a new convention, you're probably going to be 50-50 for your games.
That's a good point. I was actually looking at my notes from TotalCon the other night. I was actually cleaning up some notes that I haven't gotten to the last couple months, and I had some notes from a very bad. Narrative game that I tried out that was like, I was just kind of dumbfounded by. So good to try, good to find out.
Another downside, I think, to online conventions is, even though they're, you know, Gen Con's clearly trying with the ticketing thing to give that perceived value, I think that, at least anecdotally, I can say my experience is that fewer people who register for a thing actually show up. Right? It is just much easier. For attendees to just not going to go to that, right?
Totally true.
Like not that I want to twist anyone's arm and say, like, you sign up for this, you have to go, but I think that being physically present at the place where you're just surrounded by it all the time and you're like, well, what am I going to do, right? I'm either going to go to this event or hope I find something else, or just sit around in the hotel room. Screw it, I'm going to my event.
It makes a lot of sense. I like the intensity of an in-person convention, and it really does. It is interesting how my personality can vary if I'm in a interactive people environment versus, you know, I teach computer science, and I, you know, used to do engineering professionally, and I like programming. I can sit here by myself, and I actually find it very, very satisfying to just sit here for 3 or 4 days and just dive into some kind of programming problem. And my personality is different 3 or 4 days into that. And then if I go to a live, if I'm teaching, presenting, or best of all, going to a live convention, my personality is actually kind of different and kind of better in a lot of ways. I do think that we would lose something if we weren't able to be with other people in a space face-to-face forever.
Yeah. I mean, I think the longer this goes on, the more interesting innovations we're going to see. I hope that somebody is trying to solve the problem of keeping the focus on the convention, right? Like, that's a definite problem, right? Like, now the convention has to not only compete with all the other stuff happening at the convention, but also just, like, your television show or, you know, go, you know, sit in your backyard and whatever, right? So,
yeah. And Winterbody makes a great point that the flip side, you're right, and I think William said this earlier about how it's a lot easier to bow out of either a game or a panel, particularly if you are in one of those big conference halls.
Yep.
And you kind of have to make yourself seen a little bit. I tend to be a little shameless. It's slightly more shameless than some people about that. But we had to do that at PAX. Mm-hmm. Actually, we didn't stay for the entirety of Acquisitions Incorporated.
Right.
And I was in one game. What the heck was it? Actually, it was at GaryCon. Actually, which I was really looking forward to. It went so bad. That was the one time that I got up and went, I have a sick friend. I gotta go.
You know, I wrote a whole article on my blog about this not too long ago about, you know, sort of abandoning or trying to abandon those social niceties that stick you at the table and potentially make the game worse for everyone. Bit of a controversial topic, actually. A lot of the feedback I got was some pro, some con, which I agree on. It's not a cut and dry thing, right?
It's true. Yeah, I remember you kind of wrestling with that. And on the other end, wrestling as a referee with a particularly bad player, I remember that too. Of like, that's even harder. How do you request that someone bow out? That was super hard. If people want to see your blog entries on those topics, Paul, what is the domain for that?
Yeah, that's at paulsgameblog.com. I think that the article I'm referring to is fairly recent, I want to say. Yeah, admittedly, since we started streaming, my blog posting has taken a downturn.
Yeah, I mean,
gaming versus social graces, I think I posted back in May. Great. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic. We could fill a whole talk show with it, so let's not try to cover it in the last 5 minutes of this one.
And that's why we have a weekly talk show, Paul.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough nut to crack. I feel like there's no obvious answer here. I don't have a lot of, like, brilliant ideas for, you know, what the next big thing in online conventions is. But I hope people are thinking about it, right? I hope that it's not just, just make the online convention good enough for now because we're going to get to the other side of this thing and it won't be a problem that we have to deal with anymore. Yeah. I understand that, but, like, I don't know. I would rather be planning for the future of amazing online conventions.
Right.
And then if it turns out we don't need that plan, great. But if we do need that plan, let's start making it.
I'm going to guess that things will be changed. I'm going to guess that things will not be exactly the same. And we are lucky to be living through a really incredible historical moment. And I think things will be at least somewhat changed on the other end of that. So we hope that everybody sticks with us and gets out the other side and gets to experience the interesting, new, fascinating world that awaits us in the future. So,
yeah. All right, Dan, we're about winding up here. Any final thoughts on online conventions or Gen Con specifically?
To be clear, you know, the panels that you've run the last few days were entirely organized by Paul. So he got all the great guests that blew my mind on Friday night for the online RPG panel and organized the technical aspect of it and did all that work. I guess on Saturday night, D&D Elise invited most of the people to the panel, but you still did all the back end work. So everything that happened the last two nights is entirely due to Paul, and it was really wonderful. And I'm glad that I got to participate when it started up. And if anybody wants to see those panels, they are archived on our YouTube channel under Wandering DMs. So yeah. those are awesome.
Just so folks know, we did the topics of the two panels. The first one was called Zoom and Enhance, and it was about specifically about playing RPGs online, how to adapt from your tabletop to online play, and how to optimize your online games. The second one was called One Shot NPCs, and was more of a adventure authoring oriented panel, a lot of DMs Guild authors on that one, talking about how to make interesting NPCs for a one-shot convention game or one-shot game.
Right. We should perhaps... That seems like a really interesting topic that we should revisit. Yeah, the one-shot NPC thing, you know, I guess that for some reason that's sticking in my mind because I didn't agree with everything. There were a couple things that some people said that were a very different take on it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they were all DMs Guild authors, so they're thinking specifically about writing for publications for mass distribution. And I kind of disagreed with a couple of the things that got said there. So we didn't get to that. I had notes, didn't get to it today. Right. So maybe
let's do that on a future episode. Cause
making NPCs, yeah.
It's really, and the problem is actually very different when you go from the sort of I'm writing content just for myself to run to I'm writing content to publish to a larger audience. It's a very different problem.
An example, I mean, I know we can't get into it, but just as an example, some of us were debating in the chat about the idea of identifying a particular well-known actor as a key for an NPC. Maybe we're comfortable with that for our own personal notes. Maybe we would not be comfortable with that putting in a publication. Is that would that be okay for like a published product? I've never seen that, but it seems like anyway, so there's I'm sure we could fill up an hour just on that.
Yep. Great. Well, I guess it sounds like we have next week's topic. Or then maybe have a guest next week. Okay. We'll definitely a future show we will discuss that topic. Excellent. Any final thoughts on Gen Con?
Really, I'm glad it's there. It sounds like they've done a great job pivoting. I think that you are one of the tent poles in making that happen this week, and we are super glad that Wandering DMs got a chance to participate and get to get in touch with some wonderful new people.
Yeah.
Which is what conventions are all about, Paul.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. It's definitely, it's a very different convention experience than what I'm used to. I would still honestly love to go back to an in-person convention and try and do what I did for this one, like on a stage. That would be super fun. I never got to do that. But I'm glad anyway that we've managed to pivot and get that, what you're talking about, that sort of meeting of minds and talking to new people and getting new perspectives. That's definitely what conventions are about for me. Viewers, if you have any thoughts...
I'm going to rip off Dan in the comments and say that, yes, you were the tent Paul.
Oh, dear. Well, with that, if you have any thoughts, folks, for us on online conventions, brilliant ideas about how we can maybe make them feel more social and compelling and interactive and maintain folks' focus throughout the convention, I would love to hear that. Please leave us comments here in the video. We would love to hear from you and possibly spin off yet more topics for future episodes of Wandering DMs.
Yeah, feel free to suggest stuff. We like that a lot, actually. That helps us out. And if you are new to the show, remember that we are on several types of social media. We have the handle Wandering DMs, all one word, any place that we're on, such as Twitch and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, and also our main website, wanderingdms.com.
You can also listen to our show as audio-only podcasts if you want to, give a listen while you're driving somewhere or doing yard work or what have you. You can find those podcasts on our website at wanderingdms.com and also on a variety of podcast carriers like Google Podcast and iTunes and Spotify. If you are listening to this right now on one of those carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us. That helps us out a lot.
It really does. And as always, thanks to our patrons who support the show financially every month. We could not do all the things we do here without your help. If you would like to join them in supporting the show, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Remember, we are live with our flagship talk show here every Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We have the Dev Diary on Tuesday night at 8. When we will update you about our progress with the upcoming The Big Bad Show and what we've done with our new shoot a couple days ago, actually. And, boy, my arm's tired. Thursday, Paul has live play of 10 Dead Rats, the D&D Warhammer mashup. And then Saturday nights at 9 o'clock, Isabel and I usually have a war game where we play test my Book of War minimalist war game rules. So look for all that and more. Yeah, we'll be back. with a talk show next Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So please join us then for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.